Blog Talk Radio.
This is Equestrian Legacy Radio.
I love them from the start. They're in my veins, running my blood. And if I live to be 100, I'll never get enough. They fill our days, they grace our lives. Our links on the same chain. The kindred spirits everywhere. This love of horses that we share. Some pinto, some sorrows, the ponies, the pasos, palominos. They're in my dreams, they keep me smiling. Yeah. When I go on to the next life, I know I'll be riding. Fill our days, they grace our lives. Our hearts beat the same. Those of us who feel this way are linked on the same chain. The kindred spirit everywhere. This love of horses that we share.
Legacy Radio, and I'm your host, Gary Holt. We have a terrific show today. We're so happy to have with us again Mary Ann Kennedy, Grammy-nominated singer-songwriter and a horsewoman extraordinaire. We're pleased to have Mary Ann joining us again today. And then we have a special guest that will be with us, Eitan Beth Halakmi. He is the founder of Cowboy Dressage. So we'll be investigating the world of dressage and cowboy dressage and talk more about that when we come back. And we'll be talking with Mary Ann Kennedy, a young lady who was born to ride. We'll be right back.
That I ever said galloping in my head. Mane so and tails held high, I knew that I was born to ride. I was born to ride, like a bird was born to fly. Fish gotta swim, thumb gotta shine. Love me, love my horse. That's the way I'm gonna spend my life. 'Cause I was born to ride. Air I breathe, the way they move is poetry. Oh, never I grew them and I never will. On the day I die, I'll be loving them still. 'Cause I was born to ride.
So much fun a few weeks ago when you were on with David Litchman that we wanted to have you come back, and you've become one of my favorite people to talk with.
Oh,
and
I feel the same way, Gary. I really appreciate the new friendship.
Well, I'm pleased to know you and pleased to have you with us on the show today. You know, that song is kind of a lead-in because we want to let people know a little bit about you. And I heard that you had a plastic rocking horse.
I did have a plastic rocking horse. There's a picture of my sister and I on that little rocking horse on somewhere in some Facebook timeline that Patty posted, my sister. And, you know, I also had a Palomino stick horse. And I still have it.
Oh, wow. Wow. That's such a treasure.
Yeah. Oh, it's such a treasure. That really was my first horse.
Wow. Wow. Well, every kid wants a Palomino, and a lot of us grew up watching Roy Rogers. And, you know, a little bit later in the program, we're gonna play a song that you wrote and performed called Palomino, but we won't give too much away on that right now. But we will. But tell us about how you got started as a youngster with horses, and then we'll go into a little bit about your youth as a musician, because you have an interesting history there.
I do. It's always been music and horses. And I guess I say it in that order just because the gift of music was, you know, obvious, you know, before I could talk and say horse. It's like in my song, the very first word that I ever said, visions of galloping in my head. Thankfully, my career in music has afforded me the opportunity to have horses, to be able to, you know, have a wonderful place out here where I am now, and I'm looking out at my herd right now. But, that's just what it's always been, music and horses, Gary.
Well, what was your first horse growing up?
Well, as far as that goes, the actual horse besides my stick horse and rocking horse, my early years were on my little Shetland pony that my grandpa bought for not just me, but me and my sister and my cousins. And her name was Twinkles, and a little dapple gray with the flaxen, you know, that look, Shetland. And she taught me a lot. She taught me how to get out of the way of a pony running and scoot under a barbed wire fence right quick. And how to dust myself off and get back on. Of course, I just rode bareback. You know, we all rode her bareback. But, boy, great memories. And actually, I have a song called Hoof Prints on My Heart. And I talk about little Twinkles, that she's in heaven somewhere. And she was a little angel, really, to put up with all us kids. But that was my first actual horse. I had my very own horse after begging and pleading and saying that, you know, I'll go out and play gigs, because I was performing already at age 12. I'll put all my money and save it up, Mom, if you'll just let me buy a horse. So I owned my very own horse that I bought for $75 when I was 12.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, that was quite an accomplishment to buy your own horse at 12
yes,
years
it was.
Old.
Yes, and thank God for the sweet friend who sold me little Susie for $75. And, you know, I talk about her too, the chestnut mare, in my song called Goodbye, because I lost her. I only had her for a year, and she did. She taught me a lot about life and how I wanted to live it, and then she was one of the first animals who I absolutely adored who did teach me also how to say goodbye. You know, it's like we love these creatures. They bring so much into our lives, and chances are we're going to have many who throughout our lifetime, if we're fortunate enough to have more and live a while, that we say goodbye to. But
right.
they're all such wonderful companions and teachers in our lives.
Well, they are, and I know myself. I grew up with horses. My dad had horses before I was born, and there have been some that have been special throughout the years, and they leave hoof prints on our hearts after they've gone. So horses play a big part in our lives and make our lives all the better for having been in our lives as well. Talk a little bit about your early beginnings in music, and I think that you said that you had a cousin that you performed with.
And Randy Cook up in Wisconsin. We performed together, and we rode the little ponies up and back out behind the dairy farm up in Wisconsin, out on the dirt roads, we were just, you know, I love Randy obviously dearly, and we shared a lot together in our childhood. you know, growing up. Some of the other cousins, again, they and my sister got into the ponies too, but, you know, they all kind of grew out of it to a certain point, and it, I just never outgrew it. But
yeah.
Randy and I, with the music, same there. He pursued, he still plays out in local country, really, really good bands, cover bands up there, and he's a heck of a bass player and a really good singer. And we started performing, and I guess, yeah, when I was 12 years old, he was a couple years younger, and my mom and his mom made these little cool little outfits with all the sequins, the pictures are just a hoot. Some of them are on my website. And we were called the Little Country Cousins. And his dad, my uncle, played steel guitar. And we played the local fairs. And we got to open for, like, Farron Young, you know, when the big country stars would come up there, the local bands would open for them. So,
oh, that's great.
I started with my, quote, professional performing. Really when I was 12 with Randy and the Little Country Cousins. That's how it started.
Well, and then I believe that you were telling me that you went on to a university there and studied music and actually
right.
taught music for a while.
I did. You know, my dad, not being a musician, but appreciating the real world of the workforce out there, I said, you know, you got to have something to fall back on. I know you might end up doing music, but you need a real job. and advice well taken. And, of course, the experience of going to college was, you know, part of my maturing, and I think it's great for anybody to do that. So I did go to school, University of Wisconsin, not Madison. I actually graduated from Whitewater. And hi, everybody up there from Whitewater. And I did teach junior high school choral music for 2 years.
Wow.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy.
No, I was young enough and small enough. Of course, I still am. 5 foot. I thought it was 5 foot, but the other day at the doctor, they said it was 5'1". And I was like, wow, when did that happen? But anyway.
Oh, gosh.
So I would kind of fit in with all the junior high school kids in the hall, and I'd kind of sneak up and catch them being naughty. It was really a great experience. I took the choral program from 30-some kids to 300-some kids and really, really loved the experience and loved the kids. But I knew I was born to do it instead of teach it.
Right.
So that's when I sold the horse that I had at the time, sold everything, including my saddle, because I needed the money to pursue my dream. And I moved to Nashville when I was, well, almost 24, back in 1978.
Wow, and that was a big move for a young lady to come from Wisconsin to Music City.
You know, it was. And it was scary because, leaving the family, leaving all the friends, coming to unknown territory, but like I tell folks, you can't be an oceanographer and live in Nebraska. You have to move to the ocean, right? And
that's right.
There, I grew up in country music, even though I embraced, all the other genres like the Beatles and Joni Mitchell and all my other, Fleetwood Mac, all my other influences in that wonderful chapter of pop music. But still, my early years of influence and performing were, great mentor singers like Connie Smith and Anne Murray and, of course, the Loretta and Tammy. And so this was the place for me, Nashville,
And after you got down here, Mary Ann, I mean, did you do like a lot of folks and wait tables different types of things, or did you go right into the music business? How did that happen for you?
Well, I had met some folks when we would come down to the CMA convention as a family, and Randy and I, the Little Country Cousins, we'd do a little pick, and we'd get to, we just lived for that trip down here for a few years, and we'd get to perform on the Ernest Tubb record shop, and because he had open mic, you know, on certain nights, and that's when I remember. That's when one time, I'll never forget it. Of course, having the honor of being on the Ernest Tubb record shop, meeting Ernest, but I'll never forget backstage after we performed. I met a very young Dolly Parton and Loretta Lynn, who were having a little conversation backstage at the Ernest Tubb record shop. And being a young, innocent kid, you know, that I was, and such a fan, I went up to him and introduced myself and said, y'all, or I didn't say y'all back there because I was from a fountain. You guys, yeah, I was probably like more like you guys. I'm such a fan, and I just heard you sing, and you guys both did such a good job. You know, awkward as heck, but I'll never forget reaching my hand out and getting to shake Dolly and Loretta's hand that night at the Ernest Tubb record shop.
Oh, that was too cool. That was too cool.
Yeah.
Well, and then you went on and you have a very successful career as a writer, and some of those songs that a lot of folks know would be I'll Still Be Loving You. That was A Restless Heart, a big hit for you there.
Right.
And I think you
I know, Gary. I'm going to interrupt you because, see, I interrupted myself, and I really didn't answer that question because I diverted to Ernest and Dolly. And what I was about to say was during those trips, I met the great steel guitar player, Pete Drake.
Okay.
And Pete had a publishing company, but he happened to be at one of these things that we were at and said, if you ever come down. So I did not wait tables. However, I did carry a lot of coffee cups and empty ashtrays in Pete Drake's studio, kind of paying my dues for a little while there, just hanging out and listening and soaking it up and improving my writing. And after a little while, he did put me on a very, very, you know, humble draw, we call it, which is like whatever, $100 a week or something, to write songs for him and his wife Rose. And so I did have a place to go, which was wonderful. And yes, that's within those first couple years is when I met Pam Rose and Don Goodman and wrote our first big single that was released a few years later called Ring on Her Finger, Time on Her Hands.
And that was the Lee Greenwood song. Right.
Right.
Right, right.
And later on, years later, Reba did a cover of that song.
Wow.
So that's kind of, yeah. And, you know, sometimes it's the 10-year overnight success. And that's more common than not. And, again, I had been, you know, doing music my whole life up till that point. But I was very fortunate to meet really good people early on when I moved to Nashville and have great mentors that did kind of, you know, help the success to come way more quickly for me. And I'll always be grateful for that.
Well, good people and a lot of talent go a long way.
There you go.
And you're a very, very talented lady. You know, we want to talk a lot about your horse background, too. And, you know, when you were on the show a few weeks ago with David Litchman, we talked a whole lot about how you got started in music. And I want to remind our listeners that you can go back and listen to the podcast of all of our shows. And that was a really good show. It was a fun show, particularly when you and David had a little varying story about how you first met. That was just a ton of fun. but I'd encourage people to go back and listen to that program that we did a few weeks ago. But let's talk a little bit about how you got involved in the natural horsemanship and how that has affected the way that you write your music and the songs that you perform now.
Okay. I mean, like I said, except for those couple years that I couldn't afford a horse when I gave it all up to move down here and pursue my music career dreams. And the first thing I did when I made some money was what? Buy another horse, which was only about 3 years after I moved here. But I'd had horses since I was a kid. And just kind of always, wanted to learn more and just was self-taught. And I did join the 4-H club and had some really good patient horses. But I always wanted more knowledge, more psychology, more, well, why do you do this? And don't just, okay, I know I put my leg behind the girth and ask the hip to move and do this and that, and like that, so pull the reins to kick them to go and pull the reins to stop. And I just wanted more. I knew there was so much more to it, and I just never could find the right teachers that really spoke the language that I was looking for. And I did have to get rid of a couple of horses because I didn't know, and it was green on green makes black and blue. But in 19, which is something Pat always said, and I wrote the song, but Pat Pirelli.
Right.
But in 99, I went to a Ray Hunt clinic at the advice of a friend. I had a 3-year-old quarter horse that had just gotten out of his initial training, and we needed to get out in the world, and this Western cattleman friend of mine said, Ariane, Ray Hunt is going to be in Huntsville, and I think it'd be a great thing for you to go. And I said, really? Who is he? Oh, he's a great cowboy, a great horseman, and the old man knows a lot. I think it would behoove you to get down there. So I hauled Rio down there, and that's when it all really, really clicked. I was like, oh, my gosh, these are the answers. This is it. And then right after that, I also met David at a little Pirelli clinic over in the Franklin area. And he started teaching the game. He was teaching the games, and they had their sticks and, the natural equipment, which they said it really makes a difference if you get your carrot stick, a really good quality rope halter and rope. Well, I watched David. I thought, man, this is really, of course, I didn't know him yet. But this seems kind of weird, but I don't know, there might be something to it, just doing all this groundwork. Well, again, the stuff that Ray was teaching was groundwork and riding techniques, but I didn't know enough to follow up when I got home, even though he just blew my mind with this message, and I knew that's what I wanted to pursue and learn. So then when I met David and I knew there was an actual program that the Pirellis were building around how to learn this language, I was just in. I was in. And my life started changing for the better, and my horses will always be grateful for the fact that I chose to go down that road instead of just kicking them to go and pulling them to stop,
gotcha.
To really learn their language and have a relationship. And it's just, I'll never stop. There's so much to learn.
Well, one of the things that I think probably has been a blessing with your thirst for knowledge with the horses and with your music has been the fact that you have been able to meet so many great horsemen and actually perform with so many, just like you did with David Litchman, for a couple of weeks with his North American tour. And mm-hmm. we also have that joined us to... Well, they joined us and they left. But anyway, one of those was Etan Bethalakmi, and so hopefully they'll be back with us in just a second. But you've been able to rub shoulders with some of the greatest horsemen that we've had in the last several decades in the industry.
Oh,
and how's that been for you?
Hey Gary, I think that's why I grew an extra inch. I was surprised I was 5'1", not 5 foot. And I said, it must be because I've gotten to hang out with my horseman heroes. And it must be from all that looking up to him
over
the last 2 years. But Eitan is absolutely one of those people. And he is just an unbelievable horseman. It's a work of art, a thing of beauty to watch him ride a horse.
Well, and we're glad that you're on the program with us today, and they're back on the line. But I think that when you met Eitan, there was a particular song that you had written that he has performed to, and that's a song called Palomino, and we mentioned that a little bit earlier. Let's listen to that, and then when we come back, we'll be talking with Eitan Beth-Elachmi and Mary Ann Kennedy, and hopefully his wife Debbie will be joining us as well. So let's listen to Palomino, and when we come back, we'll have more from Mary Ann Kennedy. Eitan Beth-Elachmi and his wife Debbie. Hi guys, and welcome to the show.
Good morning.
Thank you.
Good morning. And Eitan, you had shared something with us about Mary Ann while we were chatting, while that song was playing. You want to share it again?
You know, I can try, but it's not going to be in the same kind of wording because I can't do the same thing twice. But what I can sing you the song if you want. You probably don't want to hear.
No, you don't want to hear it.
You don't want to hear that.
Well, let me say that.
You know, to be a good horseman, there are a few things that you always have to keep in mind. You need to have a good horse, and you need to have a good song. And I got them both, because I got the good horse, and then Marianne came up with the Palomino, which really make me who I am. How is that?
That's great. That's great.
Oh, man, that's good, Eitan.
Well, okay, I got to add to it a little bit, because I really believe that each one of us who consider himself as a horseman has some kind of a talent hiding in his back pocket somewhere. And more I go through my life and I look at people that I associate with, we all have that artistic ability, okay, that every so often kind of come out and is just make us better than what we are. And when I look at Marianne and I look at David, you know, I can see how it's so easy for them to communicate with the horses because they have that artistic ability. How is that?
That was good, fantastic.
Thank you.
I didn't rehearse it either.
While you were saying that, it reminded me of another of Marianne's songs, and that's called Rhythm of the Ride.
Uh-huh.
And I don't have that one to play today, but maybe we'll have that for another time. But hey, guys, this is a conversation that we have just with people that are horse folks, and so I'm just tickled that the three of you are joining us today on this call. And we were just talking with Marianne about the fact that because of her love of horses and thirst of knowledge and her ability and her talent with music, that she's been able to meet some of the most outstanding and knowledgeable horsemen that we've had in our lifetimes. And you being one of those, Eitan. So anyway, we're just tickled to death to have you. A lot of people have been looking forward to this program to learn more about the cowboy dressage. But before we get into that, would you tell us a little bit about your background? I know that you studied at the you studied pre-vet in Vienna.
Yeah. Well, you know, you can just say a little bit because it goes a long way back.
It does.
When you getting a little bit older, your background become a little bit longer. So I got to go back to my youth in a way. And Vienna for me was a stepping stool from what I knew before to what I know today. I arrived to Vienna not to study at the Spanish riding school, but I was there to get education in a pre-vet or a veterinary school. But while I was there, I been hired to have a part-time job at the Spanish riding school as a stall cleaner. A lot of people kind of don't really see maybe the benefit of being a stall cleaner in an outfit like the Spanish riding school, but it sure affect my way of looking at horses and life in so many different ways that really kind of contributes, put a lot in my foundation as something that I continue doing today and really helped me to focus on things that I never had another opportunity, I guess, that if I didn't do what I did. So that's about what I did in Vienna. I really put a good foundation to something that I built on later on.
Did that spark the interest in dressage at that time?
Well, the dressage word to me didn't click or didn't really made a lot of sense those days, because I really didn't look at it as something in specific. In Europe, when you say dressage, it doesn't mean that it's a competition. It doesn't mean that you go and do a piaf or passage or else. It's more about training a horse. So dressage for me and what we're doing today as far as the competition concerned came a lot later on in life.
Well, and that was another point that I had on here, and just exactly what is dressage?
Well, it's exactly like you said it. A dressage is dressage, is to train the horse. You can dressage a dog, you can dressage a parakeet, or you can dressage whatever else you want to do. It's a point of training an animal to do things that you want him to do.
So that's what dressage means, it's training.
Yeah, it's basically training.
Okay. All right.
Now, they have principle of dressage. Then you start taking the word dressage and make it bigger, okay? But we can talk about it for hours, and you don't really want to get into it. Besides what I can tell you, that dressage be known to be the opposite of what other disciplines may be practicing today, and that's about don't rush it, have levels, don't jog before you walk, don't canter before you trot. So there is element of dressage that are basic to any other training that you do with anybody else.
Okay. All right. Well, that helps with my understanding of that. You know, a lot of us are accustomed to seeing, I guess, what they call classic dressage.
Yeah,
and I could never see myself in those little white pants because I'm just not built for that. But the cowboy dressage was something that caught my attention a few years ago, and I could see myself doing that. What is the difference? What are the differences between a classic dressage and the Western dressage or the cowboy dressage?
Well, I think you said it right when you said that that white pants, because the cowboy dressage is a white pants with mud on it. So you really started it right, and what really cowboy dressage is all about, it's about having a Western horse becoming a better horse and a better rider, and we about a specific about what we do with our Western horses. So that's really the main difference between the cowboy dressage to any other element of dressage.
Okay, all right.
We are specific about what we're doing to make our horses better horses.
Okay, and how did you start? And Debbie, I think you're pretty instrumental in the Western Dressage Association of America, but how did the dressage, cowboy dressage, get started?
It was something that Eitan had been doing all his life, and his horses were instantly recognizable because of the way they moved and their carriage and their transitions, and it was never really had a name. It was just Eitan's horses, excuse me. And then he was asked to do a performance at the American Royale in Kansas City, and we went back there, and they asked him what his act's name was, and the term cowboy dressage was used because it just seemed to fit, and then that stuck. And so he wasn't doing anything different, but then now it had a name.
Let me just interrupt for a minute. I don't think that we started cowboy dressage. I think cowboy dressage was here many, many, many years ago before we even thought about coming up with that kind of a name. I think that Western trainers doing dressage for many, many years without knowing what the name of it means. You know, I think the huge difference between dressage to a cowboy dressage is that we both doing the same thing, but we didn't have names for it. And
gotcha.
Dressage people were smarter than us because they knew that someday they have to to put that in on writing, and they need to find names for every maneuver that they do. So what I'm saying is that cabo dressage probably in United States for a hundred of years, but nobody really brought it to light, and that's what we did. We just took it and bring it in front of the public and say, hey, you guys doing it for so long, let's come together, okay, and do it together.
Okay. All right. Well,
I have a question regarding what you just said. What discipline in Western was the closest to what you're doing, what you're talking about?
I don't think there is, you can point your finger to one discipline. But if you take reining and cutting and pleasure and trail and any
right.
other thing that the Western horse do on a ranch every day, and you
okay.
combine them all together and you put it in a hat, okay, and mix
yeah.
it, okay, I think
mm-hmm.
you get what we are doing right now. We just
great.
Took
That's
a little
great.
Bit of each and bring, and I think really that cabo dressage, maybe today it's more about education and not about a maneuver. It's about a lifestyle rather than a competition. And
mm-hmm.
if you look at it that way, you can see that it's really nothing new, okay, besides
yeah.
organize it and put it in a spoon and just start feeding it to people who are really starving for good information.
Yeah.
Okay. One of the I think the first time that I ever became aware of you, Etan, was a video that I had seen of the Light Hands and Horsemanship Clinic.
Yeah.
And that just grabbed my attention, and I think I'd even posted that thing to one of my Facebook pages and had just a ton of people that were fascinated by that. Debbie, is that Light Hands and Horsemanship, was that one of your brainchild children?
To some degree, yes. That was kind of a group effort. A group of us went to Brazil, and there was an awful lot of talent down there. We were doing a expo, and there were clinicians from all over the world, and we were with some friends, Dr. Miller and Lester Buckley and Art Perry and John Ensign, who are all great horse people, and Marianne knows them all.
Mm-hmm.
And we started discussing what we could do to carry this forward, and we came up with the concept while sitting at McDonald's in San Paulo Airport waiting for our flight. Of, you know, so many clinics in education is an hour here, one person, and we wanted to go with a broader view, something that was not being a format that was not being used at all. So we took the concept of taking you from the young horse through the advanced horse, and with multiple clinicians, all different, but all with the same goal, so that it appealed to a broader spectrum of people. And it worked.
Yep.
And it worked very well. And we threw in some incredible entertainment, Marianne, and some over-the-top vendors and storytelling and food that you can't believe. And it's been selling out for the last 3 or 4 years. We have people come from all over the world, and we only take 200 people, so it's quite a deal and something that people look forward to. And we have people that this will be our 8th year that come every year. So it's worked very, very well, and I think what has made it such a huge success is the fact that these horsemen are so genuine. And everything they give you at that event comes from the heart. And I see them afterwards, and there's nothing left of them. They give so much. It's quite a thing, quite a very almost a spiritual experience for 4 days with good food and entertainment and pretty horses.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
One thing I want to add is that the Light Hand is sure blend so nice with the cabo dressage that we are almost combining it together to like one event. And the reason I'm saying it, because Cabo Dosage is all about lightness. It's all about soft feel. It's all about what Marianne said about Ray Hunt. You know, soft feel came really from the greatest. And when we have an event like Light Hand, that really kind of show off right from the beginning that a fall born, okay, the softness and the lightness need to start there, and it's never end. It's go through his life, through his, you know, months of winning out of his mother and go into the saddle, and I don't think that training never ended. There is no such a thing as a finished horse. So I think that what you see at the Light Hand is really what we're all about. We're about being nice and kind to the horse from beginning to the end.
One of the things that I want to interject, when Eight mentioned the soft feel, and of course going back to Ray Hunt and his followers that so adhere to that, is that soft feel has been something that the show horse industry has been lacking.
Yes.
And there is not a competition anywhere that is based on soft feel. So what we wanted to do was take those great concepts and bring them to an industry that was really lacking and needed that education. So in cowboy dressage, that is the core, and you are judged on that. So much so that our scoring system has a very high score for soft feel. And so we put our money where our mouth is, so to speak. And it's the only competition that scores you specifically on that quality. And we're, as I said before, trying to bring it into an industry that really, really needs it. And so this is our way of doing it.
Well, talk to us just a little bit more about what soft feel actually is.
Well,
let me read it to you.
Okay.
Soft feel represent the highest achievement between horse and rider. There are no shortcuts on the road to its success. It is a pure partnership built on trust and reward. Soft feel is accomplished when full use of the rider correct aids have maintained the horse in balance, cadence, and carriage. When a horse is taught to balance himself and not to rely on a rider's hands to hold him in frame, lightness occurs. For us, soft feel represent our own journey in horsemanship. It is what a wish to accomplish with each horse we train. The principles of dressage are the foundation of soft feel. The Western is the freedom to ride it.
Hmm.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
Well,
and I'll add another thing that I think is really important is soft feel. Everybody can send a message to the horse. Very few can feel it come back.
Mm.
So you can start feeling that message come back. You're getting into soft feel because it is so quick, so soft. So a lot of people miss it. I think it was referred to maybe as the try. You know, it
yeah.
can be the flick
yeah.
of an ear, anything.
Right.
Marianne knows what I'm talking about.
Very
and,
good, the slightest try.
Yeah, soft feel is recognizing the try.
Wow.
Boy, that's a great explanation for people who don't, because we all know in the language of the horse that it's the release that teaches. And I guess in layman's terms, that's a good place to start explaining this. But it is about the slightest try when you ask and they give it to.
Yeah, but you've got
to
be able to
reward
recognize
that,
it.
To release
yeah.
and reward the slightest try. That will, and I guess in layman's terms further then, that does lead to the self-carriage, and
yes.
you're just kind of dancing with this horse, not controlling or holding the head or body in any position.
No.
It's more self-carriage through the teaching of soft feel.
And
right?
I think a lot of people get soft feel confused with a loose rein. That has nothing
right.
to do with it.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Soft feel, you can ride with contact and still be soft.
Yes.
Soft feel is when everything is in line, balance and cadence and carriage. That's what allows the loose rein.
So
no, in fact,
the
I like to dance. I like to dance with a lot of contact.
Yeah. No.
Okay.
Hey,
you're good. You're so funny.
Oh gosh. All right. Well, listen. This is I mentioned that this is a call-in show, where our listeners can call in and ask questions, and the number that they can call is 213-943-3396, 213-943-3396. And after Etan's remark about how he likes to have the contact and the close feel when he's dancing, we're going to listen to Mary Ann's When You Carry Me. And when
All right.
we come back, we'll take some questions if we have some folks that call in, but I want to talk more about the cowboy dressage and the competitions and how we can get involved in that. So, Mary Ann Kennedy's When You Carry Me.
What is this love that runs so deep? We try to be the best that we can be for them with every stride and every move. It's up to us to prove. It is a dance between horse and man, spirit in unity. When I ride you in perfect harmony, when you carry me, their hearts are big, their bodies strong, their feet are sure. It's up to us to mirror them with every step and every touch. We will earn their trust. It is a dance between horse and man, spirit in unity.
Equestrian Legacy Radio, and we're so happy to have with us today Mary Ann Kennedy, and that was her song When You Carry Me, and Etan Beth Alakmi and his wife Debbie are joining us today, and a great conversation that we're having about dressage and cowboy dressage, which is just really taken off across the country and being embraced by so many people and so many folks like myself that want to know more about that. But we were talking about the soft feel right before we played that song and the scoring. And again, we've opened the lines up. If people would like to call in and ask questions, you're welcome to do that. The number is 213-943-3396. 213-943-3396. But let's talk a little bit more about the cowboy dressage and how people can get involved in what you're doing. Eight?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay.
Well, let's start by saying that we are so busy, we overwhelmed with the reaction that we get from people who wants to help and get involved with that discipline. And I don't know if that's a discipline or that's a sport or whatever you want to call that. I kind of like to see that more like a community or gathering together to do, to have some fun. I think that one thing we miss the show industry is to really enjoy what you're doing without the pressure that always accomplish. It's almost like a backpack you carry with you, which is tense and pressure and stress and whatever it is. So what we were looking at competition, we're looking at something that people can come and enjoy. I want to tell you that we just started it a year ago, and last month we have a show right here in California that we had 183 rides.
Wow.
That was the biggest show at the whole fairground. And we were kind of sitting around and we just couldn't believe that there are so many people who come along and want to participate with that. But it makes sense. It makes sense because it's something that it's between you and the horse. And it's not just it's between you and a horse, that everybody who come to show the horse is part of the community that supports you, to support the friend, to support the friend, to support their neighbors, and they sit there and they just don't go away. Everybody sit on a fence and watch the other friend do the test. So I think that we have a product that is going to go for a long time, and I'm really proud of it. I'm proud that we accomplished something that the horse industry can enjoy and participate, and we all can harness together, and I think it's going to be one of the biggest division ever to get into the horse show industry.
Well, it's exciting, and while we were listening to that last song, I mentioned to you that I'm involved with the Tennessee Walking Horse. I serve on a couple of committees and actually chair our trail committee. And we've recently added cowboy dressage to our versatility program. So for gated horse people, it's been a bit of a challenge to be able to participate in dressage because rules kind of have to be modified to allow for a gated horse versus a non-gated horse. How can I, as a person that would just want to get started into this this sport or discipline, how would I do that?
Well, I really don't see that as a big difference between a gated horse doing a cowboy dressage test to a non-gated horse. The only thing we need to change is the definition of your intermediate gait. And yes, I hope I'm saying it right. There is a gate which will be between the walk and the lope, right?
Right. That's
and
right.
That's the difference between a gated horse to a non-gated horse. What I didn't know, and I kind of want to admit that I was not as good knowing everything about gated, I didn't realize how many different breed of gated horse are in this country. Mm-hmm. And when you sit down and count them, it's about 30 different gated breed in the United States. 30. and each one of them has a different intermediate gate. Do I'm on the right track or not?
Well, you are.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes, and that intermediate gate, whether it be a quarto or a running walk.
Well,
or
whatever the name is. So what I'm saying is that I think that the only way we need to figure it out is to find a terminology that can fit anybody who wants to be involved with the cowboy dressage competition. So once we figure it out what will be the name for the intermediate gate, the judge should be responsible, okay, to recognize the breed to what they do in the intermediate gate.
Mm-hmm.
But
right.
It's still, the horse need to go on a straight line. He need to perform a 10-meter circle. He need to perform a 20-meter circle. He needs to turn on the forehand, turn on the hunches, and do that like any other horse that come along in the same test.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
Another thing is that they're going to be judged on soft feel, and it doesn't matter what gates they have. So the judges
right.
still have a lot of criteria to use for their judging before you even get to the intermediate gate.
Yeah, but the intermediate gate is not something that is going to stop us from having a gated horse participate in cowboy dressage.
No.
That's what I'm trying to say. If you look at our rule book, okay, it consists on one sentence, and that sentence says, be nice to the horse.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have that 7,500 pages of something that people not obey by it, okay? We try to start with something that it's simple. So when you have a gated horse and you go in and you are nice, not nice to the horse, you know, you're going to flunk it. So I
mm-hmm.
think people have to realize that if you walk into that gate and you have a good go, which means that's a harmony, that's a partnership, there is a soft feel, and you did your straight line, and you did your turns, and you did your corners, you're going to score really well. And I'm not sure if we want to mix the gated horses with the non-gated horses in the same category. I think we should have a category that are specialized in gated horses. That's my idea before we even get in there. So you
right.
don't have one gated horse come and then not gated horse come right next to him, because I think the judge is going to leave the country.
Yeah.
Right.
That makes total sense.
Yeah, one of the challenges that I know when I talk to people across the U.S., you know, when you get into the southeastern part of the United States, you find more gated horses, than you do when you go further west, although there are a lot of gated horses out in the west as well. And when you get involved in shows, sometimes you're having to participate in shows that are multi-breed shows.
Right.
And then I think the challenge becomes, do you have enough gated horses to where you could have the gated dressage versus the non-gated dressage, or do we need to have judges that recognize that there's a difference and judge on what you said, and that is the soft feel.
Right, right.
So, yeah, it's
mm-hmm.
a lot of times it really depends on a judge being knowledgeable enough of the different breeds to recognize what they're seeing and to reward horses, appropriately.
What we did, we have our categories on scoring, which you can triple your score at the end of the test, triple, if your soft feel is recognized as a good soft feel. So
mm-hmm.
you have a horse that was a great gated, I mean, he had a beautiful gait and he think everything right, okay, but his soft feel was not as good as the other one can beat him.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So that's why I think that the gated horse can really fit into our program, okay, because they really have to start concentrating not only on the gate, but on everything else.
The
relationship.
Horsemanship,
yes.
Partnership, soft feel,
mm-hmm.
be nice. You know, there are so many other things besides having your cadence just right on the money.
Yes, sir. I love it. I think it will just enhance the horsemanship, the level of horsemanship, and change the standards from, like you say, a forced, tight, oh yeah, perfect gait to
absolutely
all of
right
what light hands is about.
Yeah,
about
and
a
I think
conscious
that
horse sense of horsemanship and soft feel.
Let's face it between us, too. If you want to be really perfect, 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 if there is such a thing as perfect, the horse is going to pay for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
So I'd rather see the horse almost perfect and be nice to him.
I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and basically, I mean, it's kind of like where it would say then in a test to trot, it's just gate your horse.
Right. Right.
Yeah, that's
gate
a good way to put it.
Right.
Gate your horse.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things.
Yeah, that's a good. I liked it. Gate your horse.
Yeah.
Gate your horse instead of trot. Now me, I write.
Well,
see,
we don't have
horses
a trot period, because our definition for our Western horse, a horse need to walk, jog, and lope. There is no canter, and there is no trot. And that's what define our cowboy dressage horse. But you can say that to define a Western gated horse can be walk, gait, and lope.
Right, right, right.
And then we solve the terminology problem right there.
Yes, that's right.
Debbie, you were trying to say something just a minute ago.
I think that when you look at cowboy dressage, you have to remember that it's a bit like dressage. It is a building resource for you and your horse. So let's say a horse comes in and he's not perfect, or he doesn't move as well, or the geometry isn't spot on. The whole point is he could be better than he was a year ago. And that's the point, is to get better.
Mm-hmm.
And to be the best you can be. That may not be at the very top, but as long as you're improving, you're doing cowboy dressage, if that makes sense. So when somebody comes in, it always reminds me, unless you've walked a mile in someone else's shoes, you really don't know their story. And so when someone comes in and they have a rough go, I've been fortunate enough to know that it's 50% better than it was a year ago. And that is the whole beauty of it, is the journey.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's
the
try.
The journey, the
that's
growth.
There you go. That's the try again.
Right.
And that's what we're looking for.
As long as you try to be better, you know, I buy it.
That's so beautiful. I just love the philosophy.
Yeah.
When you're as a person that is a novice or less than a novice, even in dressage and cowboy dressage, are there certain levels that you participate in? If I were to start today, how would I do that, and what type of level would I?
Okay, we don't have levels. What we do have, we offer you, we have a 4-walk-jog test and 4-walk-jog-lope test. And my suggestion to anybody is to start from the bottom, okay? So
okay.
If you want to go this weekend to a horse show of cowboy dressage, you probably look at the test. You say, well, I can do test number 3. My suggestion to you, don't think that way. Go and do number 1. And then find out how did you do and go from that. So start on the bottom and then climb up. Now, in addition to that 8 tests that I just told you, we have another 5 tests that we call the challenge test. And those are the tests that you go come into the court in addition to the regular test maneuver that we have. We add ground poles on the ground, which in a way can help you to find your circles, to find where you need to go. And on the same token, you go over those ground poles, and that enhance the ability of the horse to pick up his feet, which I think that gated horses should do really well with that.
Right.
Because
right.
they are so well trained and do on the trail that they probably can do that obstacle as good as anybody else. So you can really have to choose between, what is it, 8 and 5? It's a 13 test. And I always suggest go from the bottom and then climb up. In addition to that, we have what we call the freestyle. And the freestyle, that's a very minimum required. And that's something that if you have some kind of maneuver that the tests are not calling for and you want to show off and you want to tell anybody how you can see what you do and share it with everybody else, add some music to it and have fun and enjoy doing it, and that's the freestyle. So we really kind of spread ourselves pretty wide to almost anybody in the industry to find a spot that it's comfortable.
I want to interject on something on this a little bit. The challenge tests, part of the beauty of the challenge tests is they're designed in a way that teaches the horse to carry himself. The transitions and the ground poles are set up, and you will find that a horse will start carrying himself on his own because he's put in a position where he has to. And it's quite a design, and I think it's brilliant the way it's been set up, and it really helps the horse. And
what you just said, Debbie, was very powerful for anyone to understand this. I know I'm interrupting, but it teaches, those tools teach the horse to carry himself.
Right. It's not a trail class. You're not judged on how well you go over the obstacles. And they're on the ground. They're not cavalettis. They sit in the ground. But where the transitions are placed and where the obstacles are and how you go through the test, the horse almost has to carry himself and put himself together to do it.
Well, that's great.
That's brilliant.
And so there's a lot into it. It looks simple. You ride it. And if you ride the same test and take all the poles out, your horse is going to go flat on you. You're going to have to start helping him. So it's quite a test. But there were a couple other things that Eight forgot, is that we've added a vaquero division. And for the vaquero horsemen, and it's popular.
Now tell us about that.
Well, we took three of the challenge tests, and they can be ridden vaquero style, and you can ride them in a hackamore, a two-rein, or straight up in the bridle. And what we did is we have like with like, one-handed riders with one-handed riders. And you have to have traditional vaquero equipment. And a lot of people want to practice the vaquero methods in training, but they don't want to do cows, and they don't want a rope, or they don't have access to that. So this gives a place for the vaquero, a lot of the women, to come together and practice their skills and still carry on the tradition and the style of horsemanship. And they love it. So it's very popular here on the West Coast. And we've added what's called a youth and amateur on the ground and under saddle. And that might be a very good place to start. We took our court, which is regular 20 by 40 meters, and we cut it in half to a 20 by 20 meter. And first you come in and you do the court from the ground with your horse. And you start learning your geometry right then. And it's a smaller court, so it's not as intimidating. Then you can get on your horse in another class and ride the exact same test. Now, and that gives you, again, a smaller area. You learn your 10 and your 20-meter circles, your straight lines, how to do corners, et cetera. And that's a very good place to start, I think. And another thing is that the classes on the ground, these are not showmanship classes. Softness starts on the ground, and you will be judged on the soft feel. You cannot have your horse under the chin. You cannot have a chain lead. You have to have, I think it is 16 inches of slack. And your horse has got to be connected to you to do these patterns. You can't drag them along.
Wow.
And so
great.
It starts there, and you will be judged on that. And what's the beauty of it is you can have a mini and participate.
Yeah.
You
That's
can have
great.
A two-year-old that you want to get out and get some, you know, get him used to stuff. You can take him there. And so it's that is going to debut at our final show in November. We just opening it up there. But that is another very, very good place to start. And we intentionally did not get into higher levels yet because people have a tendency to jump to too high a level.
Mm-hmm.
And by not offering them, they only have the option of getting their basics right. And then
gotcha.
We'll be adding higher levels. What we did is we opened, tried to include more like the vaqueros and the gated horses and kids before we added more levels. There's so much to learn at the levels we have. And the tests are, in my opinion, they're pretty tough to begin with. They're quick and a lot of transitions and a lot of horsemanship involved. Watching them is one thing, riding them is another, and then judging them is even tougher because they're quick.
Wow.
Well, you know, just the idea of going straight line, people don't realize how hard it is.
Oh, amen.
So we're talking about how hard they are. They're hard. You got to go straight. You got to keep your horse straight in a straight line or on a curved line, and that's not easy. It's not easy.
Oh, I want to share a story real quick that really describes what we're doing. We were at a show. And this is a pretty big show. And the vaquero division was there, and we had two young people. I call them kids. They're probably in their mid-20s. And they drove 4 hours. And they show up when they've got all the gear, and they've got vaquero-trained horses. And they show up. They'd never looked at the test. They'd never looked at the website. They didn't know what they were doing. And they just wanted to come see what it's about and give it a try. And so when they went in, now we have a judge sitting there. You have to keep that in mind. So they go in to be judged. They have no clue. And they get totally lost. And Eitan and Garn Walker, is one of his partners in Cowboy Dressage, couldn't stand it. So they just went in and started coaching him. And the judge didn't care. Do it.
Wow. Wow.
And so
that's
you
great.
Can't do that at any other horse show.
No.
And they
coached
him through that class. And it took a few extra minutes. The judge said, go for it. And we turned what could have been a bad experience into a really positive experience. And everybody waiting for their next time, they didn't care. Get this kid some help. And we changed his life. You can't do that at a horse show, but you can do it in cowboy dressage.
That's great.
That is
great.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
That was
kind of neat, and they got a big kick out of it. And of course, he got a lecture when he got out of the gate. But yeah, so so anyway, that was just a story I wanted to share. Kind of tells you a little bit more about who we are.
Oh, that's great. Well, that's important. People today are, as you said earlier, are become overly stressed at horse shows.
Mm-hmm.
And too many times it's about, the ribbon or the placing, and it really ought to be about fun and connecting with your horse and just enjoying yourself, and that's it. I mean, that's why we do this. We love our horses, and we want to have a good time with them. I'm in Tennessee, and I decide that I want to get started in cowboy dressage. What is the first thing that I need to do?
Get a cowboy hat.
I've got the hat. But now, mine's a Bailey. It's not a Stetson, though.
That's okay.
That's okay. All right.
Okay, Deb, you get it.
Okay. This is what we recommend. First of all, you need to go to our website, and you need to study the tests. You need to read the information there so that you understand, have a concept of what we are doing. And you'll probably have to refer back to it more than once. And then also that you, there are many videos on our video links page and on YouTube. Some are, there's about 60 videos, I think, up there. But there's quite a few that are educational. The other place you can go to is the Cowboy Dressage Facebook page. Eitan has become a Facebook groupie. I say he's addicted. But he gets up and he posts every day on there a lot of educational stuff, and it's free.
Okay.
Before
we go too much further, give us your website.
Cowboydressage.com.
Okay. CowboyDressage.com.
And then you want to go to the competition page.
Okay.
Well, you can Google everything.
Yeah, everything's there. But you, the competition page is where the rules, et cetera, are.
Okay.
And the tests. All the tests are there, the call sheets. There's diagrams for all the tests. I mean, there's a lot of information there. And once you go through all of that, then I suggest...
Hold it just for a minute. I really believe that our website can give you a start, because everything you can think about it that you want to ask, it's there. Starting from how to set up the court, okay, what the dimensions are, where you go with it, how far you go with it, what the rules, everything is right there. Now, once you got that in your head, okay, then you probably want to go and look for some place close by that have a clinic about the cabodressage, and then
right.
you can have your first kind of wet test about what it feel like. But, you know, even if you don't have a cabodressage clinic around, go ahead and just riding it. Just start riding it. It's a very simple things to do, and there is always a way to pick up the phone and call us, and we always be glad to help you with any direction that or education that you need. So we don't have the staff or the personality, the personal available all over the country yet, because we kind of did it very careful. We say, well, we started the West Coast, and once we'll be comfortable here, it's going to roll toward the East, and it's sure doing it, because for example, Texas and Kansas have a huge followers of cabodressage.
Right.
So, you know, between California, now we got the middle part of the country. Next month, I'm going to be in Massachusetts at the Equine Affair, okay? And I'm going to leave a lot of information back there, too. So we're doing it. We're doing it. And I think that once you decide that you want to be part of it, you'll find a way to get there.
Okay, and I have been to your website many times, and it is full of information, and that would be a good way for folks to get started. And so I'll encourage our listeners to go to cowboydressage.com, also the Facebook page Cowboy Dressage, and you have a new one that you just started, Debbie. I think it's Cowboy Dressage
Gated Horses. Yeah.
Right, and so there are a couple of resources there as well.
Right, right. Another thing is, too, that if you, some people have gone to dressage instructors who are very open to doing it Western, and also that usually the dressage instructor, it's important that they have a strong Western background, and many of them do. It's just a matter of finding the right person. The thing that you want to avoid is to just have a dressage horse with a Western saddle. This is really about Western that is enhanced by dressage. It's not ruled by dressage.
Okay.
And so for your stock type horses, your true Western type horses, you want to keep the integrity of the Western first.
Okay, that is good information to have right there.
Really, really important. We're not looking for impulsion. That's not a Western criteria. We're looking for Western horses that we can make better. We're not looking for dressage horses that we can put a Western saddle on.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a good point. We try not to convert anybody here. All we try to do is take the people that are really interested in Western and make them a better rider or a better horses.
A couple of things I wanted to ask about before we run out of time today. One of them is, what is this cowboy dressage handshake?
Well,
boy, it's pretty special. That was, it was my idea, so I'm going to talk about it.
All right.
It seems like when we started this, we tried to keep it economical. Because finances are always an issue, and money should never hold anyone back from their dreams or what they want to do with their horses. So we decided that Facebook was free, and we were going to build this on Facebook, and we did it in a year. Amazing what we did. So and it's free for everybody. And then I started, Eight and I started talking and thinking, and I took the concepts of what we were building in cowboy dressage, and I decided, or we decided, to create a to create a membership that was based on a handshake. There is no password. There is no association fee. And what it, if you read the handshake, what it really says is that you're going to try to be a better person, horseman. You're going to be more patient with other people who are trying to be better horsemen. When you fail, you're going to try again with your horses. You're going to look for the try. And you sign up. And that's it.
Wow.
No money, no nothing. It's a pledge. And when you get confused in your horsemanship journey, you go back to that handshake and remember what this is about. And I think some people have found it a little silly. Most people go, it's about time.
And we have about 2,000 members in 3 months.
Wow.
So that's a pretty good handshake.
Yeah. That's a pretty strong handshake.
Yeah.
And that's what it is. And it's built on integrity. So there you go.
Need more of that today, I'll tell you.
Yeah, yeah.
Really
yeah.
need more of
even
that
when we, as we get so wrapped up in this, and our group that works with us so hard to put this together, and we can get sidetracked or kind of get astray from our vision, and we always can go back to that, and it centers us again.
Oh, well, that's
start
great.
Over. And so it's been a very valuable tool.
You know, after the whole thing, I really feel like I want to go and ride a golden palomino.
And we've got four of them.
Oh gosh! And by the way, at your ranch, you raise Morgans there, don't you?
We did. We're kind of out of the breed. We're supposed to be retired, actually, but that hasn't been going very well. So we've got Morgans and Saddlebreds.
Okay.
Here.
All right.
We have three Morgans and two Saddlebreds.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
that
you need
makes to the number five, right?
Yeah.
Well, you need to even that up. You need a walking horse to.
I think we do. You know, I'm stopped thinking about it.
Yeah.
I get up in the morning and I say, you know what? I should go and get a gated horse.
Yeah. Well, that would be a great thing, to, particularly as the gated end of things continue to increase on there.
Yeah,
so
you know, one of my celebrities kind of wants to be gated. Maybe I just kind of let him.
There you go.
I have a beautiful red and white mare that would so do this. Maybe you should borrow her for a couple of years, Eight.
Yeah.
Do you know how many people want Eight to borrow a horse?
Just kidding. I need to learn this. And I just want to say before we end this wonderful conversation, just bravo to Eight and Debbie. And I know Jack Brainerd was involved and some of the wonderful people that I've had the honor of mingling with as being a guest of Light Hands for the last 2 years. And it's just when I was listening to the Palomino song, when we were on mute, on hold, I got goosebumps just thinking about the first time I saw the little YouTube that Eitan sent me years ago with him riding his golden Palomino to my song Palomino. And that's kind of how we first met.
Right.
And I'll never forget that. And then last year at Light Hands, of course, getting to watch you ride to When You Carry Me. I mean, this is such an honor for me to be a part of this movement, and not only because of the excellence in horsemanship, but because of the integrity of these people and the authenticity and that the intention is so pure. It really is all about the horse and human relationship first. And
I
want to commend you guys and thank you so much for embracing me to be just a little part of the Light Hands experience in this journey. And I can't wait to get one of the cowboy dressage coaches, or whatever you're going to call these folks, to Tennessee to do a clinic here within the next year, because people are buzzing about it, and that's what's going to happen. This is going to take on, and it already has, a life of its own, but around the world. But yes, it started in the West, but it is going to move east. It's all, the buzz is already there.
That's where the wind is going.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, thank you, Marianne, and we're equally as honored to have you be a part of it. And I always say, I don't know how that beautiful little thing has such a great big voice.
And for you, Gary, I think that we just got a new friend.
Well, thank you. I feel
so
that way.
Anytime you feel that you're lonely, give us a call.
I will do that. I will do that. Well, I'm just honored to have the three of you on the program. I've looked forward to this, and months before I contacted you, Debbie, I was hoping that we could get you on the program to talk about this and get to meet you folks and expose other people to what's going on with cowboy dressage. We really would like to see a lot of activity here in Tennessee and throughout the Southeast in cowboy dressage, and we'll certainly be encouraging people to get involved in that. And Marianne, get that clinic going, because I think we can fill that up.
That'd be
as
nice.
Well.
That'd be nice.
Can we just say that we're going to be in Texas?
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that. You've got a clinic coming up October the 15th through the 20th, and tell us about that.
Well, it's going to be one of the greatest thing ever, because it's myself and Jack Brainer, that you know that he's 94 years old, and he knows very little about horses.
Yeah. He probably knows more than anybody.
I think I have to change a little to more. Whatever he forgets, I probably like to accomplish, just to have a part of his knowledge. But he and I doing it now for quite a few years, and it's going to be a great 5 days clinic. And at the end of the clinic, we're going to have a small show. Not a small, but it's going to be a one-day show. And I encourage anybody around Texas area to come and see us, because we're going to have a lot of fun. So that's about Texas. And just come on our Facebook or website and find the information how to get there.
Right. If you go to our website and go to our clinic page, the contact information is there. It's Bonnie Glasgow. And so there's five full days of clinics and then a cowboy dressage show. And it is at Craig Johnson's place near Gainesville, Texas.
Yeah, okay. Three Circles Ranch in Gainesville, Texas. And that's October the 15th through the 20th. And and then your cowboy dressage finals is November the 15th through the 17th, and let me let you say something about that.
Well, we decided to do this, and we've had it's kind of a celebration of how much we accomplished in the last year, and so we decided to have a show just for cowboy dressage, and the first day is a clinic day. And the next 2 days are show days.
And it's a gathering.
We've got people from all over the country. It's kind of a social event to share ideas, show your horses, and get to meet each other. And it's a perfect place for people who are wanting to know about cowboy dressage to come see it and feel it up close and personal, because it's all there.
And we really like to invite all the gated people
to come see what lies ahead for them.
Right.
You know,
it'd be a great opportunity for joining together and see and what it's all about.
Right. And it is at Rancho Murrieta, which is a fabulous equestrian center near Sacramento, California. That's where you would fly in or drive to. And
you can get a run ticket now for about $190. So it's cheap.
Really?
Really, Aid? I didn't know that.
Well, I didn't know either.
Okay. So we're excited. We've already got quite a few entries. It looks like we may have to have two arenas going at once. And Garnwalker and Lynn Moe and Susan Tomasini and Paul Dubree,
Sarah.
And Sarah Dickinson. All of them are hubs of Cowboy Dressage World, which puts on these events. And they will be doing the clinic, and we will have question and answers. And we have all sorts of little things going on throughout the show. And we've got, which is amazing, about $10,000 in prizes.
Wow.
So,
wow.
And that came about pretty quick. We've got a Dale Chavez saddle and a Carlos bridle. I mean, it just goes on, amazing. The award, and I think we've got over 25 buckles going out. So it's a big deal. We're working hard on it. So
I think I saw that.
Yes, Marianne sent us all her CDs, so somebody's really going to luck out.
But it's
really a celebration, and it's kind of like throwing a party and then see who shows up, an expensive one. But I think it's going to be a big success.
Oh, that's great. Well, listen, you guys have been absolutely a joy to visit with, and I feel like I have new friends, and I'm so grateful for that. And to have you join us for the show has been such a privilege. So, again, the website is cowboydressage.com. So we encourage everybody to go and visit that website. Facebook, it's Cowboy Dressage and Cowboy Dressage Gated. And it's MarianneKennedy.com. And Marianne has a Marianne Kennedy fan page on Facebook as well. So we encourage you guys to do that. And also you can look for Equestrian Legacy Radio on Facebook. So we certainly enjoy having folks visit our page. And as Michael Martin Murphy said a few weeks ago when he was on, I need a lot of likes. So you guys are welcome to come like my page on Facebook.
Amen.
That great thing.
Yeah.
Now that way back I performed live with Michael at the Stock Show in Denver.
I saw that video.
That was really, really fun. I think he sang me the Yellow Rose of Texas and the Rose of San Antonio, and that was a full house, and that's a lot of people out there.
Yeah.
It was really great.
Right. Well, a lot of great folks that are in this horse business, and it's a small horse world, and we're just grateful to get to know you folks. So I want to thank you again for being on the show. We're going to close out with a few announcements that we need to make, and I'll let you guys chat if you want to while I'm doing that.
Okay.
So thanks, Debbie. Thanks, Eight. And thanks,
well,
Mary
thank
Ann,
you.
As always. So appreciate you guys very much. And just a couple of announcements that we want to make before we close the show. There is a horsemanship clinic at Maple Crest Farm in Castalia, Ohio, that begins tomorrow and goes through the 13th. And that's with Charlie Roach and Pam Davis at the Maple Crest Farm in Castalia, Ohio. You can contact Joyce Moyer, and the phone number there is 419-684-9490. 419-684-9490. We encourage you to join us every Thursday at noon Central Standard Time on Equestrian Legacy Radio. We'll have exciting guests and great music, and we just have a good time sharing information. Before we go today, I want to acknowledge that in our horse world, we lost a great friend on Sunday in a tragic accident, and that was Jeff Givens. And Jeff lost his life when his truck and trailer jackknifed coming back from a horse show in Ohio, and three horses were lost, and Tim Taylor was seriously injured in that but has survived. Visitation for Jeff is today in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, at Jennings and Ayers Funeral Home from 3 to 9 o'clock, and his funeral services are tomorrow at 2. So our condolences to Jeff's family. He leaves a wife and two children and his mother and dad. And so we want to remember Jeff. And we're going to close with a song that I think really says quite a lot. And it's one by Marianne Kennedy called Horses and Life. Thanks for listening today.
Horses and Life. found the treasure chest. You can have all the rest. Just let me ride horses and light, just like the air I breathe. This love will be in me till the day that I die. Destiny, let this be my legacy.